that Miriam and I have both really, really enjoyed working with KWU people in this very intentional way since December. It's just been a couple months.
Yeah, with you guys, yeah.
We're both very struck by the dedication, creativity, and perseverance of the KWU community. It's a testament to the power of people coming together for a good cause to do good things. So I think we both find it very inspirational.
It's great. Yeah, it is really great to be in the building so much and for so long and mm-hmm. to get the outside perspectives. And I think that's why it is really important to have these plans, is because we are very much working at the desks and you're like, let's look up and onto the horizon and see where we can go, because it's really easy to go the wrong way if you're not trying to do that. So I'm glad it's happening and it's really important work, and I'm glad it's fun. I know it's important and I know it's valuable, and the fact that it's also fun is it's really great to hear.
Yeah, and we hope that this process is invigorating to anyone who encounters it. We want it to be inspirational to the KWU community, to really be able to see, oh, that's where we're headed. Together we can make this happen.
Yeah. Well, thanks for coming in for News from the Boo. And we'll just direct people to monica@kwu.org with any questions or they want to join.
Thanks so much for making time for us today, Aaron.
No problem.
Thank you.
My pleasure. Yeah, thanks.
Hello, you're listening to KWU. Next up is The Underground.
KWU Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor In a Time of Extinctions, a call to life Saturday, February 27th, 7 p.m. at the Central Lutheran Church in Portland. In a Time of Extinctions, a call to life is a benefit concert for 350 PDX, the local chapter of 350.org. The concert will feature vocalist Kathleen Dean Moore and concert pianist Rochelle McKay performing a program of words and music. Again, that's In a Time of Extinctions, a call to life Saturday, February 27th from 7 to 9 p.m. at Central Lutheran Church, 1820 Northeast 21st Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Tune in to KBOO on Tuesday, March 8th from midnight to midnight as we celebrate International Women's Day with 24 hours of programming produced, hosted, and engineered by women. There will be live music, public affairs with the feminist focus, and female DJs playing all kinds of music to celebrate the creativity, variety, and zeal of the women of the world. Again, that's Tuesday, March 8th, from midnight to midnight here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
I'm sure you don't remember me.
And now it's been 10 years. I'm still wondering who to be.
And I'd love to mix in circles, cliques, and social coteries.
That's me.
Hand me my nose ring.
Can we be happy?
Show me the mosh pit.
Can we be?
Hi, this is KBOO Portland. I'm your host, Tristan. This is The Underground, hosted by the Youth Collective. Tonight, we're going to be doing a part on imaginary things. First up is Jack.
My name is Jack Gelson, and this is my piece on imaginary things. I am going to provide your ears a pleasant treat when I present some great songs about imaginary places and people. A more fun imaginary place is somewhere the band Weezer told us about, an island in the sun. This sounds like a kind of place. I love the beach.
On an island in the sun, we'll be
you heard of the Beatles. They sang about an octopus's garden. I can't verify that it's real, but it sounds fascinating.
In an octopus's garden, in the shade.
Another famous singer with a great imagination about imaginary places was King Elvis Presley. He expressed how lonely you can be at Heartbreak Hotel. Now, that's a place I want to stay away from.
It's so lonely, baby, but it's so lonely. It'll be so lonely, they could die.
Perhaps we should think of a happier place. How about Xanadu? In this song, Olivia Newton-John and the band ELO sang about a perfect place in the movie with the same title, Greek Muses Visit Earth to help people pursue their dreams. I could use the help of a muse because I have plenty of dreams. One of the coolest places that is imaginary in nature is Eddie Grant, Electric Avenue. What other place would I rock down to?
We're gonna rock down to Electric Avenue, and then we'll take it higher.
I would surely be a fool to forget to include Paradise City by Guns N' Roses. That is a place where the grass is green and the girls are pretty. Sounds like a fabulous place to me. Songs about imaginary things are not just limited to places. Let's talk about some of the imaginary people that songs have been written about. Perhaps you've heard of one of the biggest bands in metal history, Black Sabbath. They sang about Iron Man, an imaginary character, and how powerful he was. The Beatles again showed their creativity when they penned Sgt. Pepper's Heart Club Band, a song about a group of fictional characters performing as a band. One of the wildest imaginary characters ever sang about is Pink. Pink as in the main character in Pink Floyd's The Wall. As a teen, he lost his father in World War II, then he experienced many scarring experiences throughout his adult life, and that caused him to become crazy. The King of Pop, Michael Jackson, sang one of the most successful songs that about imaginary person, Billie Jean. She represents the groupies who followed an artist and accused them of being the father to her child in the song. Jackson deems that the boy is not his son.
She's just a girl, but I'm the one that can't
I'll have to end of one of my favorite rock and roll characters. That's ECDC, the Big Jack. He likes to party hard and fight even harder. You don't mess around with Big Jack, but if you are on his good side, he'll have your back. I think I like him. For the Youth Collective, I'm Big Jack Elson. I imagine you know that.
Wow. You got me.
All right, and that there was Jack on Imaginary Things. What a great selection of musicians and people that really gave a good idea of what imaginary things were. Next up, we have Quentin on why we need imagination.
Why do you think humans have created imagination? Is it because we're not entertained with what we have? Is it because we dislike what we're given? I don't think it's either. I believe it's because humans refuse to believe that they really can do anything. It's not a bad thing that we imagine others doing what we wish we could. Look at the amazing works of fiction and movies and video games people have created. This all could not have been possible if people didn't think in that manner. I guess that's my depressing opinion. It's something I think we take for granted. Without it, we couldn't even have things like cities or transportation. If you think about it, nothing is just a math problem or is just something you may think of out of the blue. Creativity is something we all have. You don't have to be super smart or gifted. I mean, think of the things early humans have created. The Great Pyramids or the way Aztecs found a way to build an entire city over a lake. People may have had a small amount of mathematic knowledge, but it could not have been thought of unless humans were natural creative thinkers. Since the beginning, it's just something humans have in us, whether we were using it for problem solving, an art piece, or finding a better way of doing things. Whether you look at creativity as something that comes naturally, or something that's acquired through talent, it is still something we all need.
And that there was Quentin on why we need imagination. Next up, we have Maeve with a club story.
It's Maeve Z, and I will be speaking a piece for you today that I wrote called Gym Equipment and Imagination. A couple of years ago, I ran a little club that lurked in the corners of the homeschool campus where I take my extracurricular classes. We were known. We were feared-ish. We called ourselves the Duck Police. Why? Actually, a friend of mine came up with it, and when it came time to pick a name, we voted. We did a lot of things by voting, even things that might have been mundane. In fact, one time we all voted to change someone's name to Bob. It was unanimous. It all started one day during open gym, which was really just an excuse to mess around with all the equipment in the gym disguised as a class. I had gathered my small pack of friends in that class, and we were sitting in a circle in the corner, barricaded in by chairs and foam building blocks. Somehow it was decided that we ought to be a club. I don't remember who came up with it, and for all I know, no one might have come up with it. Some strange force might have just stuck the idea in our brains simultaneously. I believe this same force may be behind golf tournaments. Anyways, once it was established that we should, in fact, have a club, someone decided that we should recruit some new members, because otherwise it would just be the four of us sitting around talking, which was what usually happened anyways. At this point, I would like to note that recruiting more members was far more important to us than, say, what our club's purpose actually was, or even what we were called. My general spiel that I gave to our potential new members went something like this. Hey, we have a club or something. If you want to join, we're, like, kind of over there. Please come, if you want. It was very noncommittal. At our first meeting, there were about eight of us crouched down in our little corner, still surrounded by folding chairs and various pieces of gym equipment. So, I said, I will now call this meeting of the... Okay, never mind. First, we need a name. There were a few suggestions, including The Group, Super Soup Club, and The Duck Police. The Duck Police won. I still don't know why, but it just seemed to fit. Okay, I tried again, putting on my most businesslike voice. I will now call this meeting of the Duck Police to order. My name is... wait, dang it, we need code names. There was a lot of arguing back and forth, and more than one robust exchange of views. This was our term for a shouting match. Finally, we decided that you could just be called whatever you wanted, so long as it was creative and was approved by the leader, who for some reason turned out to be me. I decided to call myself Panther, and approved Candy Mouse, Sparks, Eclipse, and many others before reaching one of our new members, who had no idea what to call himself. "I don't know," he said. "Let me think." He thought for a while, amid many smart remarks and suggestions, until finally our youngest member, who was perhaps 6 at the time, shouted out the best suggestion yet. "Let's call him Bob!" The Duck Police cheered. Bob tried to deny his new name, but then we put it to a vote, and it was decided. He was Bob, and there was nothing he could do about it. This was how we operated. You had a short amount of time to think up a code name for yourself, and if you didn't, we would call you whatever we felt like at any given moment. I dare not think what might have happened if we had tried to pick a name for someone after watching Doctor Who. So what was our purpose? We got this question a lot, and our answers were generally the same. There would be a pause that seemed to stretch into eternity while we all looked at each other, and then everyone would start talking all at once. It sounded something like this. By the time everyone would finally hush long enough for one person to try to explain, whoever we were trying to explain our purpose to would have inched slowly away. It might have been because we never had to explain ourselves, but we never really did become organized, or really a club. Our meetings were generally 20 minutes of me trying to shut everyone up long enough to get through roll call, then another 10 minutes of talking about whatever came to mind, and then a half an hour of practicing self-defense with an unnecessary amount of intensity. The Duck Police was based so much on imagination. We imagined our pile of chairs and gym equipment was a soundproof, many-walled fortress of epic doom. We imagined we were amazing martial artists in training. We imagined we worked together with the sly, quiet dignity of a fox. Though, really, we were more like a mutated turtle with an attitude problem. Most of us were at an age where we were supposed to stop imagining, where we were supposed to be polite and grown up and adult and concerned with adult issues, and where even the tiniest slip-up was cause for major embarrassment in our minds. Of course, we were homeschoolers, and that did change things a bit, but that's beside the point. The point is that for one precious hour, every Friday, we imagined that we were powerful. We were magical. We were important. We were unstoppable. We never did have a purpose, or a point, or a reason, but we did have fun. And that brings me to my point. Our purpose was imaginary, but our friendship wasn't.
All right, so that was Maeve on her club story. I think she did a really good job giving us a great view of what her imagination is like. Next up, we have Soli, who interviewed several people, getting their take on some imaginary stuff.
Hi, I'm Soli, and I asked people a question about imaginary superpowers, and the powers were, would you rather be able to fly or be able to be super smart, but not be able to go on a plane, helicopter, anything that flies?
I'd like to have the ability to fly.
And why?
I just think it'd be super cool. Like, I could fly like myself. Is that what you mean by flying? Like, I could just fly in the air without any assistance from an airplane or anything?
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Yeah, I think that would be super cool.
Super smart. Because, and if I'm super smart, I could, you know, perfect breathing underwater, so then I could just swim everywhere, or, like, stuff.
Okay. Well, I would rather be able to be super smart, too.
Probably be really smart, but not be able to fly, because if you were really smart, you could, like, create some sort of cool device, like a phone if it wasn't invented already. But I don't know. If you were flying, then it would just like be cool, but it wouldn't. You wouldn't be smart. You'd be like an idiot flying, so you might crash into a tree or something.
Actually, you wouldn't be stupid. You would just be average.
Well, yeah, but
you'd still be stupid to a genius's standards.
Yes, exactly. So I would probably rather be really smart.
I feel like if you were super smart, I would probably choose being super smart, because if you were super smart, you could probably grant others the ability to fly, even if you couldn't fly yourself.
Would you rather be able to fly or be super smart but not be able to fly?
I'd rather be super smart. I mean, I can find like a million ways around flying if I'm super smart.
Good point. Would you rather be able to be super smart but not be able to fly, or be able to fly and stay as intelligent as you are right now?
I would say super smart, because you'd be able to figure out the wherewithals to get to where you needed to go.
Okay, thank you.
So then, yes, fly, because flying is awesome, and I love it, and I want to do it without a helicopter, because it'll be awesome.
It's not to be able to fly, because I already have a fear of heights, and if that didn't even exist, I would still be able to find a way around it. Like, do what moles do, because they go underground, and it's quicker anyways, because I'm not having to fight against the air resistance, and I'll probably find precious metals that no one else has found.
Go.
I think I'd rather be able to fly, just because I'm planning on doing quite a bit of traveling in my future.
I'm just going to say fly. I mean, come on. I don't care about being super smart. I'm just going to say fly. I'd rather fly.
Okay, thank you.
Well, I'm already super smart, so I guess I'd like to be able to fly.
Well, I'd rather be super smart, because I don't really travel anyway. And if I was super smart, I could just, you know, make some way to travel across land really fast. So I'd rather be super smart.
I think I'd rather be able to fly, because I could fly and do stuff that man couldn't. That'd be pretty cool.
Would you rather be able to fly or be super smart but not be able to fly on planes, on a helicopter, or anything like that?
I'd like to have the smarts and have superpowers. Yeah.
I would also be super smart, because I mean, I could, like, drive a really fast car across land, and then that would be really fun.
My car would be a Corvette with my name printed on it.
Would you rather be able to fly or be able to be super smart but not be able to fly, as in helicopters, planes, hoverboards, anything like that?
Oh.
Which one would you choose and why?
Wow, that is a fabulous question. Let's see. I'm going to have to think about what it would feel like to be able to fly versus what it would feel like to be super smart. I mean, you could see that it would be really handy to be super smart in our world, but it would probably be way more fun to fly. So I think I'm going to say I'd like to fly rather than be super smart.
Okay, thank you.
Like with the knife?
Is it on? Is this? Hello?
Yes,
hi.
It's on.
I'm ready. I'm ready.
Just do it.
I would choose being super smart but not being able to fly, because I don't really care about flying that much.
I would like to be not super smart, because I'm already like really stupid, so I would like to be average, but I'd have to move to a different country before I like became like, and I'd like to levitate, which would be awesome, because I could like go anywhere I want to do. I hope I like wouldn't get arrested, be like, you need a permit to fly here.
That was Soli giving his short interviews. Up next is Tristan with Things That Make You Feel Imaginary Things.
Hi, my name's Tristan, and I'll be talking about hallucinations. Hallucination is an experience involving the apparent perception of something that is not there. Hallucinating can be induced by certain drugs and mental illnesses. Schizophrenia is a mental disorder dealing with the brain. Schizophrenia in the beginning can be very mild with its symptoms. It causes people to be emotionally flat, dull speaking, a unable to start and follow through with activities, and show little interest with life. These symptoms are very similar to clinical depression. Next, this illness can cause people to hear voices, hallucinations, and smells that aren't actually there. It can compromise your rational decisions, making you and induce paranoia. Schizophrenia is just one example of how our brains can play tricks on us. Another great example is hallucinogenic drugs. These include LSD, marijuana, mushrooms, and others. These drugs block and enhance certain receptors in the brain that cause hallucinations and make us imagine that everything else is not there. Abuse from these drugs can lead to hallucinogen persisting perception disorder, also known as HPPD. In HPPD, people can see and hear what is called a visual snow, sort of like a blank channel on a TV screen. Drugs like these can change people's lives both for the worse and for better. Many philosophers have tried hallucinogenic and psychedelic drugs and say that after its use, you can see the world in a whole new light. Some even go as far to say that after their use, the answers to the universe become clear. Hallucinogenic drugs have been part of many cultures for many years. These drugs were normally used at rituals in many natives around the world. They would use whatever around them, whether it be hallucinogenic mushrooms or marijuana. In fact, Native Americans of America, along with corn, grew crops of marijuana. They have been used in rituals and are a large part of many cultures for many years. One of those cultures is our own. Drugs have been a large part of American culture for a long time. Many musicians have used hallucinogenic drugs such as Bob Marley, Ozzy Osbourne, Eminem, and Elton John. All of these musicians use hallucinogenic drugs, many fusing them with their music. Although, in these cases, the drugs do not hurt them that much, and that may not always be the case. And as an example, Eminem almost died from an overdose. But these musicians changed their generations from being very popular and some rebellious. With all that said, I'm going to play a song by one of these artists called I Shot the Sheriff by Bob Marley.
Thank you.
that was Tristan's piece about hallucinations and a song. Next up, we have Maeve with a live interview.
Hi there, my name is Maeve, and I'm here today with Alexis Thompson, who is currently hosting a writing competition called New Home Economics Short Story Contest. That is right, isn't it?
That's right.
All right. The main view for futuristic fiction currently is dystopian, meaning very gloomy, often with civilization in ruins. Stories in this contest are more focused on a brighter future. So, first question. What was it that got you involved with this competition in the first place?
Well, a friend of mine was telling me that what she had seen at the Epcot Center 20 years ago, which is a tourist attraction for seeing what's going to happen in the future, remarkably came true, notably that we would be communicating with our loved ones primarily through screens. And I agree that there were definitely experts who were working there and, you know, had information to make that prediction. But I also think that millions and millions of people went and saw this prediction for the future and then went home and built it. And I thought that there should be a collection of other stories to refer to, just so that we have more variety and more options and more positive possibilities to refer to. And I thought, what better way to get people to write these stories than to offer them a prize? So I hosted a contest.
Cool, cool. Now, why don't you tell us a little bit about those prizes?
So the first place prize is $250. Two runners-up will also receive $50, and about 10 or so of these people will be published in a book titled Guidelines for the Future, our short story collection to use as a reference, as a globe for inspiration as we go about our days inspiring the future.
That's really cool. So, why do you believe that a more positive view of the future is important?
I think that having ideas of things that can go well will give people options and thoughts that they might not otherwise have.
That's okay, that makes sense. Now, have you ever written a story yourself like the ones you want to see entered in the contest?
Well, I didn't for a long time. I was helping some of my friends think of ideas of things that they could write, and I realized I needed to write one myself, and so I actually did earlier this week. And mine takes place in Durham, North Carolina, about maybe 30 years in the future, and it's peppered with different things that might become standard urban practices like running buses on methane, which is a byproduct rather than a fuel that we have to fight for in wars and whatnot. But the story is mostly about how one family decides on what business they were going to start next and how they can best serve their community through their own income and how a family chooses to do that.
That sounds really interesting. Is that ever going to be like published or?
I'm going to include it in the book, yeah.
Oh, cool, cool.
And it's available online. If you go to the website, www.youngabundance.org, you can see that as a sample story.
That's great. I'd like to read that one. Now, what would you say is the overall goal or mission of the contest?
I want to have a collection of stories that people can be inspired by and use as possibilities as we build the future, because everything we do influences where we're going, and I want people to keep these positive options in mind.
Now, could you tell us a little bit about the title of the contest? Why is it called New Home Economics?
So the idea of New Home Economics is recognizing that health and sustainability are relatively new concepts in the way that we run our homes. But those two phrases, health and sustainability, are kind of thought as bougie things to do or something that's only catered to rich folk. However, we all struggle with budgets in our own ways. So in being able to incorporate health and sustainability into your household's life is new home economics to me. And the stories are supposed to be about families or households. They don't have to be families. They could be, a household could be the five roommates that I live with, you know, for example. That's a household.
All right. And what inspires you? Is there a story or a quote or anything at all, really?
A lot of things inspire me. My favorite way to read is to go to the library and check out a bunch of books on one topic and kind of like lay around in them in a bed full of ideas and thoughts and references. I use indexes a lot rather than a front to back person. So maybe that's why I chose short stories. But I also really enjoy Alan Watts and Tom Robbins.
Cool. And is there a piece of dystopian fiction that you find interesting?
I find all dystopian fiction interesting. It makes sense that that's what humans would be drawn to, the gloom and doom. I work in early childhood education as well and witness children playing out violent things all the time. Oh. Imagination around fear is like a really healthy way and to deal with fear and to practice what if, what would I do if. So it makes sense that those things would happen. I really enjoyed the latest Mad Max film. I just want folks to recognize that positive futures are also possible.
Cool. And so this contest is all ages. Why is that specifically?
I think that age can be a huge limitation on who is invited to design the future. I think that young people such as you running this radio show are left out of a lot of conversations about where are we headed, what could be done. And I think that there's no reason to exclude any person of for any reason because it's our planet and I want everyone to be included.
Wow, that's really great. And what are your hopes for the future?
The ones I think about the most are sustainable farming. I work mostly in food education. I also am currently extremely concerned about affordable housing with what's going on in our housing market here in Portland.
Oh, yes.
I also think a lot about racism. I'm a multiracial person myself, and have had a lot of emotions come up with Trump on the television all the time. And lastly, I would love for there to be a future where we end the violence against women.
I agree. Now, you wanted to encourage our listeners to enter your contest, and there are only 5 days left for them to do so before it closes on February 9th. Do you have any tips for them?
Yes, so February 29th is the cutoff. That's only 5 days, but that's plenty of time to spend one day sitting down and outlining what you want to do and then come back to it and write it out the next day. That's my tip. But what I'm really looking for, like the stories that are going to win, the stories that will be published in the book, are stories where you take the future as we are headed, you know, the projected future, the expected future, and take something about that and change it. I'm looking for transformations about the future, not just enjoying what's already coming up.
All right, that makes sense. And so the word or the word count or the length of these stories, we're talking like...
It's 700 to 1100 words. So it's a really broad word count on purpose because I don't want that to be much of a limitation either.
All right, that's cool. And how can we contact you or enter the contest?
Great, so you can read all the information that you need is available at youngabundance.org. You can also email me directly at youngabundancellc@gmail.com. And again, you've got 5 days to win cash prizes and publication.
All right, and I think this is our last question. Is there anything that you wanted to add that we haven't asked you about?
Yeah, I'd like to plug the fact that at the end of all this, we're going to have a big party and celebration to honor the people who have entered and to make the books available for sale. And it's going to be combined with Earth City Repair's Earth Day event that's coming up in late April.
Great. And I think that's everything. And thank you so much. I may have been talking with Alexis Thompson regarding her short story contest about futuristic fiction. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Maeve and Alexis. Up next, we have Ellie with a story about when imagination goes too far.
imaginations because they get identified with it, and then they're not really imagining. They're just literally stuck in it. So they really don't know they're in the imagination or fantasies. So real imagination is that you know you're there, you know you're imagining, you know you're in the middle realm. And the middle realm of imagination is also then the source of creativity. And the way that great saying means all failures of the human race are failures of imagination means that when people can look and see how they're imagining things, where they're stuck in the way they're imagining things, it gives them the ability to start to imagine differently and often change their attitude. And that in itself is often the source of change. And so I use it all the time in mental health, and it's one of the sources of healing all over the world.
Hello, my name is Liana Krill, and my piece is called Imagine. What if there was a doll bed that you could put a doll in, and when you would come back to the doll, it would be alive? It could talk and move and do anything us humans could do. The doll bed would be like magic. What you once thought was just a doll could turn out to be a lot more than you think. The possibilities are endless. Is your little sister ever getting really annoying? Well, now maybe you can put her in the bed too, and she'll become a doll. I mean, just take a moment and imagine what it would be like. It might happen when you were sleeping or even before your very own eyes. You would get to see what your doll's real personality is. Did you always play Cinderella as nice and loving? Well, now she might be evil or rude. I hope you've taken this crazy idea into consideration because it may seem impossible, but you never know what will happen if you tuck your doll in again in that one doll bed in the corner of your room. This is Liana Krill for the KABU Youth Collective.
Thank you, Liana. Up next, we have Elizabeth with What People Imagine.
It's... people, what the heck goes on inside their minds when they imagine random things? As we go through my piece, people have many different things that they imagine.
I actually imagine a better future, something where there's no war, no class struggle, no racism.
That sounds better. I think I would imagine more about fantasy lands, about things, stuff, fantasy scenarios. Stories, kind
of. I think about fantasy to escape reality.
Yeah.
Sometimes reality is cool, but then other times it sucks.
I imagine fish, and they walk around, and they're like humans, and then like the humans are in the ocean, and they're really stupid. And also, like, someone like pours like acid on an ant, and it becomes like this big ant, and then ants take over the world, and they get like, they kill all the people who are like... the ones who smash ants and stuff, and we're all like slaves in the future. So that's what I think of.
So it's sort of like making animals the superiors and then making humans really stupid.
Yeah.
Cool.
I imagine a lot of things, mostly about the meaning of life. But then it turns out really boring, so I just start to think about something else, like life after death. But then that turns really boring, and so I think about other things, and then those other things I think about get boring, so I just end up thinking about a lot of things. I can't just focus on one thing I think about.
I imagine things like future lives, or about things I've never done, places I've never been.
I imagine a lot of things. I imagine being famous. I imagine Doctor Who becoming real. I imagine the space-time continuum. I imagine Sherlock being real. I imagine a lot of things. And it's just great. And it helps me escape the real world because the real world sucks.
I know.
Exactly.
Thank you for listening to my piece on what goes on in people's heads. What do they imagine? I'm glad you actually spent time to listen to my piece and to this entire show, because it's all awesomeness.
Once again, this is Elizabeth from the Cable Youth Collective, and I hope you enjoy the rest of the show. Bye.
Thanks, Elizabeth. Up next, we have Why We Need Fiction by Mallory.
It has been scientifically proven, on many accounts, that the human brain genuinely functions better when exposed to works of fiction. Not only does it exercise your imagination, an excellent escape from reality, but it also has proven neurological benefits. For starters, fiction affects you emotionally. Not only does it trigger certain emotions not always experienced in daily life, but it also helps your brain to become emotionally stronger. Ironically, reading fiction, a solitary activity, can improve your social skills and understanding of other people. Readers of fiction are generally more empathetic people. It could be from the in-depth emotional exposure to the internal thoughts and feelings of other people that comes with reading about them. In this way, fiction simulates social experience. Readers of fiction are also better readers of social cues. The complexity of the characters analyzed so thoroughly through the focus of reading can help us to be better at understanding real people. Another strange correlation within readers of fiction is their improvement in theory of mind, or the ability to understand that other people think differently from you. Even stranger, fictional television works the exact opposite way. By reading, fictional characters are better interpreted as people instead of just characters. Aside from emotions, reading fiction improves the connectivity and overall function of the human brain. From a neuroscientific standpoint, reading exercises the left temporal cortex, responsible for the reception of language. The brain is tricked into cognitive thinking. Many other parts of the brain are exercised as well, improving the connectivity between all of the language comprehensive areas of the brain. All that said, go ahead. Read that cheesy romance novel you're ashamed to have. Waste as much time as you want traveling through time and space by way of fictional novel, because according to science, we could all use some fiction.
All right, up next, we have Starman by David Bowie.
Didn't know what time it was, the lights were low, oh, oh. I leaned back on my radio, oh, oh. Some cat was laying down some rock and roll, at a solo set. Then the loud sound, it seemed to fade. Came back like a slow voice on a wave of fate. That weren't no DJ, that was hazy. There's a starman waiting in the sky. He'd like to come and meet us, but he thinks he'd blow our minds. There's a starman waiting in the sky. He's told us not to blow it, cause he knows it's all worthwhile. He told me, let the children use it. Let the children use it. Let all the children do get.
Children use it, let all the children do get some.
That was David Bowie. Now we have a song called Imagine by John Lennon.
Critics are raving about Eddie the Eagle. This movie will make you want to stand up and cheer. It's uplifting, inspiring, wonderful, a must-see.
Sorry, we had an ad there on YouTube.
You may say I'm a dreamer. Thanks for listening to The Underground. The Underground is hosted every fourth Wednesday by the KWU Youth Collective. We meet every Wednesday at KWU at 6 p.m. to plan our show. If you are interested in getting involved, come down or call our youth advocate, Aaron Yankee, at 503-231-8032. Extension 221, or email youth@kboo.org. We also do a music show, the youth edition of 1212, which airs second Friday of every month from 8 to 10 p.m. We are always looking for music by anyone under 21 of any style. And check out our website, kboo.fm. FM/theunderground or kboo.fm/youth. Next up is Hard Knock Radio with Davey D. Thanks for listening.
Community Radio is a proud sponsor of the 26th annual Cascade Festival of African Films from February 5th through March 5th. Most of the films will screen at Portland Community College Cascade Campus, and two films will show at the Hollywood Theater. The five-week-long festival of feature and documentary films come from all over the African continent and include Thursday evening documentary screenings, Family Film Day, and Women Filmmakers Week, held during the first week of March in celebration of Women's History Month. Again, that's 26th Annual Cascade Festival of African Films, playing Thursday through Saturday until March 5th. Most of the films will screen at Portland Community College Cascade Campus, 705 North Killingsworth Street, in the Arts and Humanities Building in Room 104. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.